Joey and the Pea-Ball by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2008. Sawmill was a California town named for a mill that had existed so long ago that even the oldest of the old-timers wasn't around when it was. There was a park alongside the creek where it had been, but only the name remained. Sawmill was a bedroom community for the city of Sand to the south. There was a valley where a creek ran to the bay, but mostly it was very hilly, with the bulk of the residential section reached over narrow one- and two-lane roads. But its proximity to the city of Sand made it a favorable location, and those who invested in property there had done well. Its other distinction was a 9-hole municipal golf course. Many boys in their teens had both played golf there and also waded the creek that ran through the middle and supplemented their allowances with the golf balls to be found there. That was long ago. Now, because of fears of liability, the creek was fenced in. The green fees were sufficiently high that the sawmill golf course was beyond the reach of many. Over the hill that ran along the back of the course was the town of Owlswood. It was sometimes referred to as Bogey City, as balls hit into the rough in that direction tended to make you go over par. They were rarely found in the high grass. Owlswood High had some young golfers who wished they could play every day, but the cost of playing at Sawmill made it only possible once a month at best. Stuart Smart, hereafter to be called Stu, noted that if it wasn't for losing balls in the grass, that it would be possible to play along the hillside and ridge between Sawmill and Owlswood. The ridge itself presented different problems. Long ago there had been sheep in the county, and there was a shepherd cemetery on the ridge consisting of crypts above ground. Certainly not a unique golf hazard, but a different one. Stu shared his idea with Mickey Allison, Carl Schaefer, and Jeff Trotman. They often practiced chip shots using spoons and sand wedges on one stretch of open ground. They dreamt of being able to drive a ball down the fire trail on the ridge and then find it. Slightly outside their circle was Jeff's little brother Joey, who didn't care at all about golf. He was the geek of the family and more at home in the high school physics lab than on the golf links. One day, he heard the boys talking about the problem of lost balls, and asked if they could give him a few old balls. Mickey had found a hole in the fence over at Sawmill, and gone up and down the creek at dusk, and collected a few good balls, plus a number of dinged-up ones known as rocks. He gave Joey three of his rocks. They'd all pretty much forgotten about Joey's request when 3 weeks later he presented them with a ball that was slightly larger than a golf ball. Stu asked, "What the hell is it, Joey?" "It's a ball that's hard to lose. What's so special about it?" Joey took out a small radio and turned it on. Then he bounced the ball, and out of the speaker came a medium-pitched tone with a vibrato to it. He stopped bouncing, and the tone continued, taking several minutes to damp out. "It's just a basic piezoelectric effect from a ceramic transducer." Stu shook his head and said, "Well, ask a stupid question," and his voice trailed off. Jeff said, "What happens if you hit it really hard?" Joey, with a smug look, said, "Try it." Mickey did a chip shot from the lawn over his dad's car and onto the neighbor's lawn. There was a whee out of the loudspeaker as the ball was hit, and then silence. Stu said, "Did we break it?" "No," said Joey. "Take the radio and go to where the ball is." Sure enough, as they got close to the ball, a tone was heard again. Carl had a watch on and timed the singing from the radio speaker. It lasted well over 3 minutes. Stu smiled and said, "Tall grass, anyone?" Not one of them could say or remember piezoelectric, so they christened the special balls Joey had made P-balls. Late the next afternoon, they practiced some drives on the football field to gain confidence they'd be able to find them again. The harder the ball was hit, the longer it sent out a signal. Even Mr. Buns, the physics teacher, came out to see the demonstration. The boys then ventured into the hills to map out their practice holes and incorporate as many hazards as they could find. Creeks figured large in their plans, as did stretches of grass lined with trees. Mickey had gone with his dad to Pebble Beach and had been impressed by the 18th hole with trees on both sides of the fairway and the ultimate water hazard, the Pacific Ocean. Greens were a different matter. While they could practice their long game in the hills, for their short game they'd have to use the putting green at the park and sawmill. Their first day of practice, they came up with a hazard not faced by those on the pro tour. Carl hit the ball down along the fire trail and went after it using an MP3 player with a built-in FM radio. He found the ball, but it had landed square on top of a yellow jacket's nest. The boys decided he could put another ball into play, but he'd have to come back at dusk and retrieve his original. Up in the cemetery, there was a piece of uneven ground that was mostly in the shade of a water tower and a live oak tree. Moss had grown on the ground, making it a reasonable substitute for a green. The boys spent time reading this green and then putted toward a hole they'd made. Like a true green, balls went short or overshot or were way off their marks because of an unread break. Stu pushed a putt a little too hard, and it went off the moss and onto a raised marble slab. Mickey laughed. "I was playing with my dad near Phoenix one summer, and the greens were like concrete. I want to see you play that marble lie." One day as they were playing, they paused when a man and his daughter came up the fire trail. The man's name was Steve Higgins, and his daughter was Pam. Pam was cute enough that at least one of the boys seriously considered giving up golf on the spot. Steve wrote a column for the local newspaper and was very interested in the pea balls and their use. They went on their way, and the boys resumed play and forgot about them until they were mentioned in his column the following week. No big deal. Everyone has their moment of fame. Their mothers clipped the article to send friends. But a clipping service also clipped the article, and thus it made its way into a giant database of articles. 3 weeks later, Joey was at school in his calculus class when the vice principal came in and spoke to his teacher. The teacher looked at Joey and said, "Someone is here to see you, Joey." Joey went to the office and noticed there were three stretch limos parked in front of the school. One had a military insignia he recognized, but the others were unmarked. Joey was taken to the conference room and there found six men and one woman in military uniform, plus three civilians, one of whom was Joey's father and another Mr. Buns, the physics teacher. The eldest of the men in uniform spoke up. "Joey, I'm Major General Anderson, and we are here to find out how you made the pea ball. It turns out it may have some application that will save soldiers' lives." They talked for a while, and then a whiteboard was brought in, and Joey made some drawings. The military men deferred periodically to the remaining civilian, whose name was Alan Fine, a physicist from Los Alamos. He would nod from time to time to tell them what Joey was saying was plausible. Mr. Buns and Joey's father beamed with pride at Joey's explanation of the theory that led him to the materials for the pea ball. When Joey shifted to quantum theory, the military men rolled their eyes, but Fine stayed right with him. The upshot of all this was that the visitors departed with all of the pea balls, and Joey's notebook was classified top secret. 2 weeks later, a man with a briefcase appeared bearing certificates from the Sawmill Golf Course for paid-up green fees until each of the boys was 21. Joey received notice of a full government scholarship to the college of his choice. Back at Los Alamos, Dr. Fine was reviewing images made by an electron microscope of the materials used to make the pea balls. He turned to his assistant and said, "I suppose I told you they were using these balls to play golf." "Yes, you did." "One of the materials is a naturally doped semiconductor, and the other is very similar, but an insulator. How can you tell the difference?" "Well, as I said, the structures are similar, but there's a hole in one. The assistant groaned, and then both of them laughed.